Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to explain all this to you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me, Jim Cramer. Milestones might seem arbitrary, but they can tell you a lot about what works in a given market. Today, while the S&P dipped 0.21%, NASDAQ edged down 0.26%, the star of the show is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which briefly crossed above 40,000 before pulling back a bit and closing down 39 points. Still, that's a huge leap from where we arrived at Dow 30,000 back in November of 2020. So you know what? I think it's worth exploring what stocks got us here and why. During this period, we've constantly been told that tech is the market leader. But when I look at the top 10 stocks that are up the most during the Dow's trip from 30,000 to 40,000, it's a very surprising group. Only two of them from tech. We also kept hearing, right, that interest rates are all that matters. But that's played a smaller role than expected, too. Only the 10th stock really impacted. Instead, it's an odd grouping, where the main thing these companies have in common is very strong, exceptional management. Let's run them down so we can learn what the market really wants here. I need you to think about this. Even though we didn't close above 40,000, this is what matters. First is American Express, up 100% since Dow 30,000. Now, look, we could say that gain came from post-COVID travel and leisure boom, right? Makes sense. Amex has been a major beneficiary of the long on money, short on time thesis, where people questioned how they were living their lives, wanted to travel and see the world after COVID made them recognize their own mortality. Another way to look at it, get busy living or get busy dying, if you want to put it in Shawshank terms. Dining out also jumped because the rise of work from home spurred a post-work camaraderie. Cooped up? Go out for dinner with colleagues after work, or really anybody for that matter. I'd agree that that's a big part of what American Express has become a winner. But you know what? How about this? How about thinking about Steve Squeery? He's the CEO who got the top job 6 years ago. I think his decision to go after younger people, millennials, Gen Zers, as potential customers, has ignited card use and given Amex tons of new customers with a tremendous lifetime value. This generation came up with online comparison shopping, hey, practically from birth. They want value. They want bargains. They're frugal. Squeery knows if you give them a good deal, you can keep them as long as you offer a lot of personalized service and a robust point system. They love points. It's worth it. Second is Caterpillar, up 98% over the same period. Again, there's an obvious reason for success, all the federal infrastructure money that's on the way. And again, the obvious does matter, but the secret sauce behind this move has more to do with the success of Jim Umpleby, the terrific, unassuming CEO who's been at the helm since 2017. When Umpleby took over, he made a decision to de-cyclicalize Caterpillar, make it less of a boom-bust industry, while focusing on returning capital to shareholders via buybacks. He also decided to diversify away from China. In retrospect, like, come on, what a brilliant move. These days, data centers and energy are the big movers for the stock of Caterpillar. Now, the analysts have been very slow to recognize these changes, with many fighting the stock tooth and nail all the way up. I say Umpleby's done the unthinkable with this one. big cyclical stock that he's turning into a semi-secular growth story. Third, Microsoft, 97% rally. He's got plenty to do with CEO Satya Nadella's decision to go all in on his cloud infrastructure business called Azure. Oh, it was a gutsy bet going up against Amazon for web services, wasn't it? But it's paid off. Most recently, the aggressive posture toward AI with the big investment in OpenAI has put Microsoft in pole position. Some say driver's seat in artificial intelligence race. It's one of the few companies besides NVIDIA that has an actual AI profit center. Fourth, David Solomon's taken some real heat for some of his term at the helm of Goldman Sachs. But the stock is giving a 96% gain, for heaven's sake, during the Dow's run from 30,000 to 40,000. Those who spew negativity are way out of whack with reality here. By returning Goldman to its roots, focusing on the wealthiest of the wealthy while staying on top of M&A and IPOs, he's quietly giving some gigantic gains. He's rolling back the previous agenda when the company was trying to pivot to the consumer, regular people, which blew up in their face because, well, that was never what the Golden Slacks was about to begin with. He used to be rough around the edges, but he's a good business person who knows when to cut his losses. A terrific quality that you rarely see on the arrogant Wall Street. Fifth is Rob Davis, and this man has lit a fire under Merck. He's pressed his bet on the company's amazing cancer franchise, Keytruda, but more important, he's taken those oncology profits and using them to make acquisitions to bulk up the pipeline. Merck shut out $11.5 billion for Acceleron with its cardio franchise, and then $10.8 billion for Prometheus, which has a promising immunology profile. And these two takeovers will help them cope with Keytruda losing patent protection in 2028. That great management's given you the stock of a 71% gain since November 2020. Do you know what would be substantially lower if these Davis acquisitions hadn't been made? Sixth, Chevron CEO Mike Wirth puts his shareholder front and center. This company pays an outsized dividend with consistent growth, which makes its stock the bluest chip in the integrated oil space. Some say the best thing he's done is go after Hess in a deal that's being challenged right now by regulators. I think the best thing Wirth did was to not overpay for Anadarko. He let that very expensive acquisition go to Occidental Petroleum, which almost ruined it if it weren't for Warren Buffett. Chevron stock would have rallied over 68% since November 2020 if he'd foolishly won the bidding war for that property. It would be much, much lower. It was just, it wasn't luck. He knew. Seventh, there are many reasons why I say own Apple, don't trade it. We saw one of them during the run from Dow 30,000, which is the triumph of their service revenue stream. The remarkable amalgam of all the things you pay for Apple, for once you've been ensconced in the ecosystem, it just keeps growing and growing. Given the amazing customer satisfaction, you can extrapolate the service revenue stream into a lifetime value per customer. And you know that the cell phone purchase is just the beginning of the profits. All right, still an overdependence on China, I get that, which is why Apple's expanding aggressively into other areas with big population centers. Look, in the end, I think Tim Cook's done a remarkable job. He's improving some products, inventing others. You gotta like it. Eight, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, is a great banker. What else is he supposed to say? He's got a great banking team, rarely makes mistakes. He's got a tremendous loan book. The stock's still cheap, even as it's run from 64% since November 2020. I like the dividend, too. Ninth, for the most part, these winners can't be pinned on the Federal Reserve. But I will say that Travelers, the big insurance company, has benefited mightily from higher interest rates, which have dramatically increased its profits. It's a good underwriter, dominating certain lines, but I think its investment portfolio is the main driver for the more than 60% gain over this period. Finally, when I examine the United Health Group and try to assess its 55% rally, I come back with two reasons. One, we can't seem to get the cost of healthcare under control. And two, Optum, their health services arm, is incredibly lucrative. I wouldn't know how to roll back price increases here. Sadly, healthcare inflation seems like a given. The bottom line, to me, this list is emblematic of the fact that we should spend a lot less time focusing on the Fed. It's really only fueled the gain of Travelers. And a lot more time discussing management and mission. That's what propels these stocks long term. And that's what makes the difference. Let's go to Eric in California. Eric.
Yes, Jim.
Eric.
Eric from California.
All right. What's going on, Eric?
Give me your opinion on Groupon. One of the biggest laggers of all time.
Well, It's corrected. It's lagging. Groupon. Holy cow. It's got a little gain here this year. I would take it. Let's go to Joe in Florida. Joe.
Hi, Jim.
Joe.
I just want to let you know that I'm a proud club member.
There we go.
I love your stuff.
Thank you, man. I'll keep working for you. keep working for you. What's going on?
Thank you. Hey, as the best steel maker in America, their first quarter earnings fell short, and for this quarter they're providing weak guidance. Yet a couple weeks ago on your show, the Nucor CEO said 2024 will be a very good year. The stock in the last 6 weeks fell almost 13% since its high. Is this stock a buy? Thank you, Jimmy.
Okay, we're watching it. You know, it's in the bullpen. Jeff Marks and I were talking about it today. There's going to be a level where we feel more confident than right here because we still think that there are grades of steel that are coming down. But it will be a coiled spring once the Fed starts cutting. So you got to think, well, we're close. We're close. Let's go to Rocco in New York. Rocco! Rocco? Rocco? You're up.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I was on mute.
That's all right. That's all right. Okay.
First-time caller. I'm a long-time listener. I'm really curious on your opinion on Reddit stock.
Oh, Reddit's easy. I've been saying buy. I think it's one of those companies like Pinterest that is now part of the bundle of what advertisers want. They are reaching the right people when you can get them, and people age up in that thing. I think it's a terrific, terrific stock. I really like Reddit. I want to go to Vera in New Jersey. Vera.
Hello, Jim.
Vera, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Long-time fan.
Excellent.
First-time caller,
okay,
and a two-year club member.
Yes.
Much
thank you very
older
much.
Than you.
Everyone should
much
join the club.
Much older than you.
Kill it.
But
right.
Still
I
learning.
I try so hard. You know, what's up?
Okay. I am much older than you, but still learning. You
hey,
are
that's
a
okay.
great teacher.
That's okay.
My question for you is on AMD. Buy, sell, or hold?
AMD, Lisa Su's doing a terrific job. I think she's going to revise up. How many of these GPU of the really good chips she's going to have and how much she's going to sell? I think you buy AMD here. All right, look, this list that I've just put together is the perfect reason why maybe we should stop obsessing about the Fed all the time. Maybe we start listening to what the companies are telling us and doing because that's what's propelling these stocks higher. Management. Well, man, I'm going to tell you, what footwear stocks are a good fit in this tape? I'm telling you which names I think can keep running. And CrowdStrike's up over 260% since last January. So I'm checking out some charts that are defending further growth for this cyber powerhouse. And don't miss out on one software stock that I think is headed still higher in the changing ad market. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This has been a tough moment for footwear and athletic apparel, with both Nike and Lululemon feeling impaired. Nike hasn't been a good stock for over 2 years now. And Lulu's now down almost 35% from its all-time highs last December. They're not just weighed down by the usual worries about the tapped-out consumer. They're also struggling with endless competition. Everybody in the space is going against Nike. While Lulu's up against a host of smaller, fast-growing athleisure brands like Gap's Athleta or Levi's Beyond Yoga, among others, they have put more money behind Beyond Yoga. As a result, this business has a growth problem. Nike's looking at 1 or 2% revenue growth this year. Lulu only got for 11 to 12% growth when they gave you their full-year forecast in March. Wall Street wanted 14%. Last year was 19%. I remember it was even much higher than that. So where, oh, where can you find growth in this group? Tonight, I want to highlight two growth stocks in the athletic footwear and apparel space that are still working that I don't talk to you enough about on holding. And, you know, I like them very much. They're the parent of the red hot, I mean like smoking, on footwear and apparel brand. And then Deckers Outdoor, which we like for its Hoka running shoe. Although it's also got Uggs and Tevas. When On reported this spectacular quarter earlier this week, it showed you that some brands are just working a lot better than others. But first, let me set the scene. On rallied like crazy early last year, climbing to the mid-30s before pulling back with the rest of the growth cohort last summer and into the fall. It dropped to the mid-20s back then. When we looked, remember, we checked in with management. The darn thing was still stuck at around $25, even though On Holdings had just put out a bullish analyst day where they rolled out some ambitious long-term financial targets. They said they were going to double their sales from 2023 to 2026, for heaven's sake. How's that for growth? Since then, the stock's been running with only a couple of interruptions along the way. The last couple of times they reported, in November and March, the stock sold off in response, even though I thought they did well and eventually the market seemed to come around because the stock bounced right back both times, thank heavens, because I pushed it both times. But with the broader growth stock sell-off in March and April, On Holdings came into earnings this week on a weak note, having fallen from $36 in early April all the way down to 30 and change on Monday night's close before they reported the next morning. So the market was caught off guard when On turned in a gem of a quarter. Keep in mind, this is a Swiss company, so their numbers are all in Swiss francs. Still, they delivered 21% revenue growth, and it would have been 29% on a constant currency basis. Management said their excellent growth was fueled by strong demand, including major momentum for the direct-to-consumer channel, which includes both their online store and a growing footprint of retail locations. Remember that one we went to in Williamsburg? It was really great. We were there last summer. Direct-to-consumer sales are up 39% year-over-year, or 49% on a constant currency basis. That is gigantic, especially because direct-to-consumer is more profitable, given that you cut out the middleman. Speaking of profitability, On's gross margin came in at 59.7%, up from 58.3% a year ago, on the doorstep of the medium-term target, which is 60%. Meanwhile, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization were up 27% year-over-year. Net income more than doubling versus last year.
Buy.
On Holdings made 33 Swiss cents. Get this. Wall Street was looking for 14. Wow. The strength here is incredibly broad-based, with better-than-expected sales in the Americas and Asia-Pacific, the two key growth regions, up 52% and 76% respectively. Everything seems to be working for these guys now. From the company sponsored athletes like Helen O'Beery, who just won the Boston Marathon for the second consecutive year, covered head to toe in On gear, to its new product launches, which are performing well, to its channel strategy, where those direct-to-consumer numbers were incredible, to my closet, where my wife has tons of these. Now, On Holding only maintained its full-year forecast of at least 30% net sales growth and a gross margin around 60%, while talking about, quote, a commitment to ongoing profitability increases. On the other hand, management also said they're, quote, remaining prudent in light of the dynamic macroeconomic and consumer environment, end quote. Hey, look, that's why they didn't raise their forecast after a strong first quarter result. That was the only reason I'm still on board. But with the stock coming in to the quarter cold, the strong results were enough to send the stock up 18% on Tuesday, added to those gains in the last 2 days. With this breakout, On's reached its highest level since the first few days of 2022. And you know what? I don't think it's anywhere done going up. By the way, this big short position, those guys are going to be wrong. They're kind of wrong already. If you're looking for a company with similar growth prospects in the athletic footwear slash apparel space, right now I can only think of, and this is one I haven't pushed enough, Deckers Outdoor. For those of you who don't keep track, Deckers is a parent of multiple brands, Uggs, Tevas. Right now I want to talk about the company's principal growth engine, and that's the Hoka brand, H-O-K-A, which is their running shoe brand, like soon to be becoming their top-selling brand, too. People don't use it just to run, and I know that. Now, Deckers is yet to report. We're going to get the results a week from now. consider that a disclaimer, because you never know how any individual quarter is going to go. I certainly don't want you to buy this one ahead of the quarter. That's not our game here on Mad Money. But I do expect a strong set of numbers from Deckers, thanks to Hoka. This running shoe brand has grown from $223 million in sales back in 2019 fiscal year to, get this, a projected $1.78 billion in sales for the fiscal 2024. That's fantastic growth. That quarter ended in March. In other words, Hoka's had a compound annual growth rate of 51.4% over the past 5 years. No wonder parent company Deckers has seen its stock surge 513% over the same period. So that's how real money. That's how real money's made. We'll see what Deckers has to say about Hoka next week. But if you look over the last three quarters, the numbers have been great. Just like On Holdings, their direct-to-consumer business is growing like crazy. They're also expanding aggressively overseas with a lot of success in Europe and China. You don't hear many other footwear apparel plays talk about those two regions as a source of strength. And by the way, have some real staying power. So what's the catch with these two growth footwear stocks? All right, now this is where it gets really important. They're expensive. They're really expensive. On Holdings sells for over 33 times next year's earnings estimates. Deckers sells for 25 times next year's numbers. But you know what? You have to pay up for outsized growth, and these companies can deliver it. More important, this market values growth again, which means these stocks can work. Let me give you the bottom line here. Even when the footwear and athletic apparel space is a nightmare for most of the industry, you can still find great brands that are winning, like the ones that belong to On Holding and Deckers Outdoor. And you know what? I bet they keep winning. Mad Money is back after the break.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Demand for energy is projected to continue rising in the future. To help keep up, Chevron is increasing their U.S. oil and gas production, and they're innovating to help do it responsibly across their operations, including their Gulf of Mexico facilities, which are some of the world's lowest carbon intensity operations, helping supply energy that's affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/meeting demand.
Now that the averages are making new highs again, this market has a kind of glass half full attitude. We need to sift through the stocks that have rebounded from their lows to find the ones that could have more upside. Remember, entire groups went out of style in March and April. Wall Street started worrying that inflation was too high and the Fed wouldn't be able to cut interest rates anytime soon. In fact, many commentators even told us to steel ourselves for rate hikes, something they keep doing, by the way. They don't stop being wrong. But a few weeks ago, we started seeing more and more brown shoots. That's signs of slowing in the economy, my term. The kind of slowing that allows the Fed to go easy on us and eventually give us the rate cuts that we want so badly. When we got the cooler-than-expected consumer price index reading yesterday, it confirmed everything I've been telling you. Inflation's coming down because the economy's finally deteriorating. For the stock market, this is actually good news, even though it seems like bad news, because the more bad news we get, the easier it is for the Fed to cut rates. And once the Fed starts cutting, well, you can see an upswing coming a mile away. Everyone tries to get in ahead of it, which is what the rally's been about. So now that we're back in an environment where the Fed is, if not our friend, then at least no longer our enemy, all sorts of formerly red-hot stocks have started working in. I want to identify the ones that could have potentially the most upside. That's why tonight we're going off the charts with the help of a guy with a red-hot hand, that's Dan Fitzpatrick. He is a terrific technician. I've known him for ages. He's the founder of Stock Market Mentor, host of his own podcast, The Fitz Factor. Don't forget, in late January, he pounded the table on NVIDIA and Supermicro, two of the best-performing stocks of the year, even though they temporarily pulled back in March and April, something that they've already recovered from pretty substantially. Hey, get this. I mean, this is one of the greatest calls ever. 2 weeks ago, he told us to buy Goldman Sachs, and that thing has just been on a roll. Now, Fitzpatrick says he likes what he's seeing from CrowdStrike. The cloud-native cybersecurity company run by George Kurtz has reported an excellent quarter back at the beginning of March. We've liked it for ages. Then a couple weeks later, they announced a big partnership with NVIDIA. They're using AI to build automated cyber defenses for the enterprise. Of course, by the time we got to mid-March, growth stocks had gone out of style, which is why Wall Street didn't care and the stock pulled back hard, even though nothing was wrong, before finally bottoming on April 19th. Since then, though, it's rebounded from 280 to 339. So what does Fitz see here? What does he like? All right, take a look at CrowdStrike's weekly chart. When you take the long view on this one, you can see this stock's been on a tear since its lows in January of 2003. I'm sorry, 23. Wow. Up more than 260%. Look at this. This is, I mean, you can't see exactly how big this is. This is a monster run here. It's had a phenomenal move. But consider the big picture for a second, all right? Fitz thinks It's only just begun its next leg higher, even after this remarkable run. He points out that CrowdStrike has spent the last 2.5 years setting up what's known as a cup and handle pattern. Very reliable. It's a U-shaped bottom, in this case, written by someone with bad handwriting, followed by a period where the stock trades in a tight range, either going sideways or slightly lower. See that? That's what's doing right there. And that's what makes up the handle. Cup, handle. Why do we care about drawing pictures on the chart? Because a cup and a handle pattern is one of the most reliably bullish configurations you can find. It's my favorite. Once you get to the handle, the stock tends to break out to the upside, and then you get a major move. So again, so here's the cup, here's the handle, and when you get to about this point in the handle, it goes like that. In the case of CrowdStrike, Fitz points out that the stock plunged nearly 70% from its high in late 2021 to its trough in January of last year. Pretty deep cut. Then the stock reversed course and started moving higher. A year ago, the 10-week moving average went above the 40-week. See, remember, we have these crossing situations that people love so much in that chart business. That's a bullish crossover because it's another reliably positive pattern. Sure enough, CrowdStrike's had a tremendous run over the past year, printing a new all-time high in March. By the way, this company has never missed its earnings. Not once. Of course, it doesn't hurt that it is a company with unbelievably strong execution. And I've got to tell you, the stunning numbers we have seen from it in the last quarter just tell me, look out to the upside. Fitz says this is a textbook sign of institutional buying right here. Big volume, okay? Because institutional buying is only what drives stocks higher. This is just all smart money, okay? It's just smart money. That March high completed the cup part of CrowdStrike's cup and handle. Then we got the handle. It's a prolonged period of not-so-hot action where the stock nevertheless stays in a fairly tight range. And there's the handle. According to Fitzpatrick, now take a look at this. This sets the stage for the next leg higher, as you can see in the daily chart. Okay, so now we're going to the daily. All right, we get a shorter-term view. He notes that CrowdStrike's extended pullback below the 50-day moving average last month occurred on relatively light volume pullback right there, okay, which means that these moves don't last. So the pullback is going to be shallow. There was only one high-volume day, that was on April 19th. There was the peak. Right there, okay? All the weak hands got washed out right here, and now it's in strong hands. That's how it bottomed. Since the April 19th low, the stock's rebounded by more than 20%, okay? And unlike the sell-off, this is a higher volume rally, institutional buying. And Fitz believes it's marked by really, really concentrated big money. At this point, CrowdStrike's at 329, and he thinks it's got a ceiling resistance at around 360. Which is where the stock peaked in March, but it might not be a firm ceiling. That high was nearly 2.5 months ago. So you got to wonder whether how many traders are eager to sell their stock at these levels now that it's running again. Remember, those most likely to sell have already headed for the hills. The weak hands shaken out right here. So that leaves the strong hands. If CrowdStrike runs up another 5%, Fitz thinks it's going to be in blue sky territory. As long as the stock can clear the hurdle at 360, he's betting it's going to be smooth sailing to get this. 430. Why that level? Because when you get a cup and handle pattern, stocks tend to rally by as much as they fell during the previous decline. And that would take CrowdStrike to $430, up nearly 90 bucks from where it's currently trading. Of course, this type of measured move isn't foolproof, but you'd be surprised of how often it works. What if Fitz is wrong? As long as CrowdStrike holds above the April low of roughly 280, then he'd stick with it. But if it violates that level, then he says you got to start questioning the validity of the uptrend. That's the way technical analysis works. But the bottom line, the charts interpreted by Dan Fitzpatrick suggest that CrowdStrike's next leg higher is just getting started, and he's betting the stock has a lot more room to run. In this new market, I think he's probably right. And as far as the fundamentals, wow. This just delivers, delivers, and delivers. I want calls. I want John from Illinois. John.
Kramer, Ed, thanks for all your dedication to us home gamers and ba-ba-ba-booyah.
Oh, ba-ba-booyah right back, and thank you for that. I sure do try. Well, how can I help you?
Cloudflare, it's one of my favorites since 2017. I started buying it then when you recommended it, and I added more last year at 57, and now went above 100, and now it's back to the 70s. The earnings was good, except the revenue guide was light. I like what they're doing. Should I buy more here?
John, I don't know. Like you, I was a little perturbed by that last quarter because of the revenues being light. I also know that they were light for Akamai, and they were light for Fastly. So we got to see what's going on in the content delivery network. Now, Akamai happens to have a fantastic security business inside it. I would actually chuck the content delivery and keep the security business, but Matthew Prince really just has content delivery. Let's wait another quarter. I just don't feel good after that revenue breakdown, and I think the next quarter could be better than this one. All right, the charts as interpreted by Dan Fitzpatrick suggest CrowdStrike's next move higher is just getting started, and I am in agreement. In this new market, I bet he's right. Watch where I'm at Monday, including my check-in with the Trade Desk after a new partnership with Netflix sent its stock soaring. Then, are you packing your portfolio with inflation fighters? I've got the names the consumer can count on, the ones you should like, and the others, Raggedy US, no thanks. All your calls, rapid fire, tonight's edition, lightning round. Stay with Kramer. Let's talk about the biggest story that might have flown under your radar yesterday afternoon. While everybody was busy celebrating the record average that we got, we had found something out that I didn't see coming. Got some news from Netflix's Upfront event where they try to convince advertisers to place ads on the platform. Specifically, well, here's what we found. Netflix is working with Cramer fave The Trade Desk, which runs a virtual marketplace connecting advertisers with digital real estate while also helping them improve their targeting. Now, I've been following this company since it came public in late 2016, recommending it repeatedly over the years to you. We've also had The Trade Desk co-founder and CEO Jeff Green on the show many times, most recently about 11 months ago. In a nutshell, The Trade Desk platform helps match advertising dollars with digital destinations. Often, you'll see the advertisers turn over their entire digital advertising budget to The Trade Desk, knowing that's how they'll get the best bang for their buck. Often they could have chosen Google. Instead, they went with The Trade Desk. At the same time, The Trade Desk also gets hired by digital platforms to help attract advertisers, which, of course, they can do because they control so many advertising budgets. And they have the data to show you exactly which sites are the most effective places to put up ads. With Netflix, they're doing the latter, helping them lure in advertisers. Yesterday, Netflix announced its plans to launch an in-house advertising technology platform by the end of 2025, saying it's working with Trade Desk, Magnite, and Google's programmatic advertising subsidiary to make it happen. So Google's still in there. Previously, though, they worked with Microsoft's advertising analytics division. I think they've found greener pastures. Investors seize on the Trade Desk's involvement is particularly important because this is a proven outfit with a good track record. And that's why the stock jumped 4.7% yesterday, tacked on another 3.3% today, after several analysts extolled the significance of this Netflix deal. Now, there's the obvious benefit, which is that Trade Desk getting more business from Netflix, which is paying them to attract ads. But remember, this company also works with advertisers. They have a two-sided marketplace. So the Netflix deal helps the other side of the business, too. They now have another high-quality digital destination they can finesse for their advertising customers. Morgan Stanley's research department was particularly effusive this morning, saying that the Netflix selection of Trade Desk, and I quote, speaks to the increasing importance of the Trade Desk within the advertising-based video-on-demand ecosystem, end quote. They also note that this is the fourth new or expanded partnership that the Trade Desk landed just in the past 2 months, following recent announcements from Disney and Roku, and yes, Comcast subsidiary NBC Universal, parent company of this network. Morgan Stanley also points out, and I'm going to quote, the potential for a Netflix Trade Desk partnership had been a major point of debate among investors, as bears believed a streaming platform at Netflix scale might attempt to circumvent third-party ad tech entirely. Good thing that didn't happen. Long story short, the Trade Desk is on, and it's just in fuego, okay? Inking multiple new deals that could be hugely beneficial to the numbers in the quarters or years to come. And I know it's moved up, but I'm telling you, this is a winner. And it could come down, you can buy. You know what? The Trade Desk was already doing pretty well before all this. These guys just reported a little over a week ago, delivering a really stellar quarter, 28% year-over-year growth. That's a market acceleration from 20 to 25% growth that they saw in the four quarters of 2023. On top of that, company posted a 4-cent earnings beat on a 22-cent basis. This isn't just a revenue growth story, 13% earnings growth. When you look at the earnings for interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, they were up 49% year-over-year. And that is stellar. On top of that, management gave us very bullish guidance for the next quarter. CEO Jeff Green attributed the robust results to, and I quote, the continued strong growth of connected TV, end quote, that's streaming, as well as, quote, the growing ubiquity of UID2, end quote. Now, that's referring to the company's unique consumer identification system, which is one of the best tools that advertisers have to target specific groups of people. The Trade Desk controls the UID2 system, something that's increasingly valuable in a world where privacy rules make it much harder for apps or websites to track you. Additionally, Green cited, and I quote, new approaches to identification, quote, end quote, and, quote, greater deployment of first-party data and retail data, end quote. And he said that with significant AI advances in our Kokai platform, we are better positioned than ever to deliver premium value to advertisers and continue to gain market share, end quote. That just is terrific. Beyond the specific Netflix announcement or the strong quarter, I like the Trade Desk because it's one of the best pure plays on a huge secular theme. The continued movement of advertising dollars from legacy media channels. It had been radio. It had been print. Now it's, geez, it's regular TV. Wow. Toward digital. We're always on the lookout for this way to play this theme. And by the way, that is one of the reasons why we had Reddit on the show this week. You know, I think that's terrific. Mentioned that earlier. And it's why we follow Pinterest religiously. Had him on the show just last night. But I think the Trade Desk is arguably maybe the best option out there. It's a picks and shovel play for effective online advertising. One more point. If you want to understand what makes the Trade Desk so powerful, it's because over the past few years, this company emerged as a true third power in digital advertising. Look, for a long time, you really only had Google, which includes search, Gmail, YouTube, and a colossus of a programmatic advertising business. Then there was Meta Platforms, that's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's Reels, that's WhatsApp. It was a two-horse race. But you know what? Advertisers obviously don't want to be hostage to two incredibly powerful companies. They're eager to turn to somebody else for parts of the digital ad budget. And that's where the Trade Desk comes in. It's the non-aligned Switzerland movement of online advertising. Plus, the Trade Desk keeps increasing its reach to more and more digital channels, including now Netflix, while their consumer identification system goes perhaps the best way to offer customized ads. They're a real rival at this point, which is why I find it so odd that the regulators have started going after Google for supposedly monopolizing this business. They would have had a much better case if they didn't wait until the Trade Desk to become a legitimate third-party player. Hey, the third player. Now, let me tell you something, Justice Department. I know you're terrific, but maybe you should rethink your case, given how powerful the Trade Desk is. So here's the bottom line. Yesterday, we learned that Netflix is using Cramer Fave, the Trade Desk, in its in-house ad tech platform, which has sent this stock to a new 52-week high. I think that's great news. But frankly, the company gives us great news all the time. That's why I think if it comes back at all, and it could because we had a big reversal at the end of the day, the Trade Desk can keep working its way higher. And hey, Jeff Green, it's been nearly a year since we had you on. Come on back. Tell us what else is going on besides this Netflix deal. Tell us about all the things that are going right. Mad Money is back after the break. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Okay, right. We're going to do the same as college. But you know, play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Dad's over the lightning round. Okay, let's start with Dave in Illinois. Dave!
Dr. Kramer, yesterday your daughter was on set wearing Walmart combat boots. Can you tell us about that?
Well, she says they cost very little and they were as fashionable as anything she ever saw when she went to Parsons, Dave. That's good enough for me. I told Doug McMillan that's good enough for him. He'd be the CEO. What's happening?
Sounds good. This $190 billion consulting company is down 20% since reporting second quarter results in March. You might agree that Accenture is a suboptimal stock for now, but with future AI deployment, should we wait for green shoots to sprout? So, Jim, yeah. Please reassess Ms. Spellman Suite's leadership at ACN.
Boy, Dave, I'll tell you, I saw the downgrade yesterday, too, and I couldn't believe all the way down here they downgraded. And I was thinking maybe it's Kindle picking up the slack, maybe it's IBM. But I'm with you. I think Accenture is too low. But, Professor, I think SAP is better. Let's go to Anthony. And I like ServiceNow more, too. Let's go to Anthony in Washington. Anthony!
How you doing, Kramer?
Not bad. How about you, Anthony?
Appreciate everything you do. I've been listening to you for a long time. Long time.
Oh,
first
time fantastic.
Calling.
Fantastic.
Hey, everybody I know, we follow you. I'm averaging 50% gains a year thanks to you. That being said, I found one of my clients turned me on to the ticker's OUST. Do I got something hot?
Oh, man, that's a LIDAR play. I tell you, I've not been recommending any of those EV plays that are losing money. They do a lot of autonomous vehicles, but I can't go there because I'm not recommending stocks where they just have not been able to even get near a profit. Let's go to Russell in Texas. Russell.
Hi, howdy, Jim. Calling from the great, sprawling DFW Metroplex.
Oh, I'm glad you're here.
We love your sense of humor. Thanks for the entertainment and the good advice.
Thank you.
I'm calling about a Texas-based company in Irving, Texas. This bodacious bull is up over 150% year-to-date. Can this bull give Tough Hedeman another smack in the face? The company is VST.
VST. I've been joking about this stock with Ben Stoto, who runs research, and we have to do work on it because this thing has been such a rocket ship. I can't just say it's moved too much. I got to learn it better. I'm going to Thomas in California right now. Thomas.
Kramer, booyah, ahoy from the San Francisco Bay. You are a lighthouse beacon in the winter North Atlantic for storm-tossed mariners. Thank you for keeping our ships off the rocks.
Wow, that's just, well, you're like Moby Dick here, huh?
PCG, it's fire season out here.
Oh,
fire
I've been, you know, I Patty Poppy is so crushed. You know, I recommended 12, I recommended 13. Do I have 15? Do I have 16? I hear 18. Do I have 18? 18, 20. Sold for $18. Let's go to Robert in Illinois, please. Robert.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah,
I've got a question with football season coming up, the various betting sites, particularly DraftKings.
I saw Flutter's numbers. That means that DraftKings is the one to buy. I think it's terrific. Okay, let's go to Gary in Oregon. Gary.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Kramer. About a year ago, you were talking about raw materials for lithium batteries and precious metals and so
right.
forth, and you had a company on there, MP Materials Corporation, which I bought a little bit. And
it's been disappointing. And I think it's because they're not making a lot of money. They have to, Latinsky has to come on and say, listen, I'm done talking. I'm just going to make a lot of money. And then we have something. But otherwise, what I feel like is that I've got behind a losing horse. And I don't like to be betting behind losing horses. What can I say? That's how I feel. I feel that way about SoFi lately. Let's go to Ron in New Jersey. Ron.
Hey, hello, Jim. A big old bridge, New Jersey, booyah to you and your fabulous crew.
Man, I'm liking that. It's a local booyah.
Yeah, you betcha. We'd like to thank you for your knowledge and your guidance through the years.
Thank you.
It's been fabulous.
Thank you.
My wife and I, Maria, wish you a long and healthy life. With all the best that life has to offer.
Oh, thank you. Thank Maria, too. That is very sweet. I feel very blessed. My daughter was here yesterday. It's really terrific. What's going on?
Yes. With that, my question is on Boston Scientific.
That company is just doing so well. They have an amazing cardio franchise. I wish I owned that for the trust. It is just fantastic. Great call. Thank you for the kind words. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab.
You're either fighting inflation or you're causing inflation. Some are obvious. Walmart's fighting it. Everything, every number, every line item was a record today. But the real takeaway line for me was when CEO Doug McMillon said that the largest retailer in the world had, and I quote, mid-single-digit deflation in general merchandise. Yes, deflation. If you go, you can see it right in the aisles. Remarkable bargains, the way the stores used to be when it was owner run. Food had some breaks, big rollbacks in bread, soda, albeit private label, not to mention pot pies, boneless, skinless chicken, so much. These matter. As McMillan told investors, quote, our rollback count is up, and customers are responding to our price leadership, end quote, including a new house brand, by the way, called Better Goods, with 70% of items priced below $5. Here's how McMillan put it to me when I checked in with him. Quote, it's in our DNA going back to Sam Walton to figure out how little we can charge for an item, end quote. I love that. Normally, Wall Street hates to hear about price cuts, but this time people recognize that fighting against inflation is good for business and good for your stock. And that's why Walmart stock shot up 7% today to a new all-time high. Costco knows this better than anyone. They try to sell a ton of items at cost, and at times even below cost, because it's not a price business. Costco wants volume. It makes its money on its membership card. How about the obvious inflation causers? The worst offenders right now that I can see are the insurance companies. Some of these rates are up so much that I can't blame anyone for believing there may be some sort of collusion going on. I wish our regulators would stop investigating Apple for producing phones that are too good or going after Amazon for squeezing suppliers to give us consumers lower prices and start investigating the seemingly endless spike in insurance prices. Why doesn't someone come in under the big insurers' rates, too, to take share? Hey, you know what? This used to be a competitive industry, but it doesn't feel very competitive at all anymore. Now, Wingstop is an inflation fighter. You can get in and out for next to nothing. Of course, Wingstop got the luck of the draw because the chicken wing prices have come down dramatically. But lots of fast food outfits keep marking up their chicken anyway. Hey, by the way, we sold McDonald's. Remember, they finally decided to win over the franchisees, offer a $5 value meal alternative after relentless price hikes. There's a reason Wingstop's only a few points away from its all-time high, and a lot of the other guys are not. But Starbucks. All right, Starbucks is sticking by its high-priced coffee and seems tone-deaf to the idea of offering some outsized bargains that would bring in more customers. While Starbucks was always expensive, it's gotten ridiculous here, and people know. Hence why its stock is $30 down from its high. TJX is a fighter, though. It's got fistful of cash for struggling retailers, taking excess merchandise off their hands, flipping it to the consumer at ultra-low prices. TJX's stock is within spitting distance of its highs. Kudos to Chinese company Temu for keeping prices down, too. They are definite inflation fighters. Where we have no inflation fighters is in shelter. The home builders simply aren't willing to build excess homes in an era when mortgage rates are very high. They'd rather just buy back their own stock. But I think this is a failure of government, from state and local zoning laws that make it hard to build to high levels of immigration at a time when we've got a huge housing shortage. We need to start offering serious subsidies to developers who are willing to convert empty office properties into apartments. You need the subsidies because it's costly to convert, and the cities do not like losing those commercial real estate tax dollars, which are much higher than residential. Time for the feds to help out. There are inflation fighters in fintech, though. Take Affirm. Its buy now, pay later plans and its lack of interest charges give the consumer a real leg up. Interest is a tax on the consumer, and that tax has gone up mightily. Affirm is basically giving you a tax refund. You can rip through industry after industry, and what you'll find is that some companies are standing with you, the consumer, pushing prices down, and there are others, well, let's just say they are trying to keep prices high, and their stocks are suffering, and so are you. Now, I know the government seems clueless about the fight against inflation, but at least the market is on our side. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'll find it just for you right here, Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.